Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Curious Advantage podcast series. This series explores how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and organizations, especially in the context of our new digital reality. It brings to life the latest understandings from neuroscience, anthropology, history, and behaviorism about curiosity and makes these useful for everyone. My name is Garrick Jones, and I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage. And today I'm here with my co-author, Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And our distinguished guests. We're delighted today to be joined by Sarah Morelli-Oglu.
Hi.
And David Harrison.
Hello.
And they're here to talk with us about investigative journalism and documentary making. We're looking at the focus of criticality. And in our book, The Curious Advantage, we focus on criticality as one of the seven C's in our model of being curious. The key thing for me about criticality is about how you enter a situation, a story, something you're exploring, something you're learning about, something you're curious about, but how you do that in a way that doesn't trigger your unconscious bias. And the reason why we're really interested in investigative journalism and documentary makers is because these are people who, as professionals, have to maintain that critical distance in everything they do when they're exploring new stories or understanding a network they may be involved in and so on. And those are the things I'm really interested to speak to Sarah and David about today.
David, with you having a career as an investigative journalist, we'd be fascinated to hear a little bit about your story. What got you into that in the first place and some of your experiences?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I didn't come to investigative journalism straight away. I mean, like most journalists, I started off doing, in fact, many years doing news. And along the way, I was doing investigations. I've probably reported in nearly 100 countries. I've done investigations of a whole massive range of topics. But I think, you know, often investigations spring from a news story that you've done or an idea that you have based on a news story. And it's often it comes from a hunch or an idea, a feeling that there's more to this. And I think what drew me to it was that after a while, you just want to get into things a little bit deeper. And I think, you know, when you look at things like serious crime, corruption, exploitation, abuse, corporate wrongdoing, all these different kinds of wrongdoing, then it really is then about how determined you are to get into that subject. And I think this is what you need. We talk about curiosity. You need a huge amount of curiosity. You need to want to know. You need that desire, that thirst to find out and get behind stories that are often covered quite superficially in the news. But I think, you know, for me, investigations, documentaries are more satisfying in the sense that they allow you to dig much more deeply and to expose things. But of course, it's important to stress that it's all, from our point of view anyway, it's all evidence-based. So it's the search for evidence which drives you, and that without some sort of curiosity and drive and a passion and an element of initiative, resilience, all of these qualities, I think, are really, really important.
Sarah, you're a documentary maker working with the BBC and others. What's your critical engagement with this topic?
I started off in natural history documentaries, interestingly, and then moved more into sort of anthropology programs like Human Planet and those types of things. As I've been doing this for 17 years, and as I got older, the subject matter got more serious, I guess, and I moved more into current affairs and programs like Newsnight and Panorama and Dispatches, and I'm now at Channel 4 News. But I think you have to be very curious about things and want to expose things. And I think once I start to get an inclination that something's wrong or not going as it should be going, you have to be sort of obsessed, really obsessive, to kind of uncover things. I think you have to naturally be curious. Some people just aren't that interested in things except for what's going on within their own lives.
And Sarah, what's your process, if I may ask, like in terms of when you start to find a story, what's your process?
Well, I think usually what happens is either I'll pitch a story or I get approached by the commissioner or an editor. And It really depends on the nature of the story, but it's usually starts off with getting access. So it's all about making connections with people and speaking and usually trying to meet them for a face-to-face chat. I think it's really important to gain trust is to give that person control of their story to a certain extent. And it's really important to be able to give people control, especially if something has gone terribly wrong in their life, of how they want to tell their story and to work with them. It's a collaborative process. And I think that's something in journalism that's really important, so that everyone walks away and feels good about what they've done, whether they're a whistleblower or someone that's a rape victim that the police didn't properly investigate and they're talking about something extremely sensitive. I think my process is really trying to understand what that person would want out of this and why they should want to expose something, tell their story.
And David, what about you and your experience with getting hold of a story and following it through? How do you gain trust with the people that you are involved with?
Yes, well, it depends on the kind of story that you're doing and how much time you have. We did a documentary on modern slavery, and just to pick up on a point that Sarah made there. And the modern slavery included three types of modern slavery. There was labor slavery, sexual slavery, and drug slavery. And certainly on the sexual slavery thing, I mean, some of the victims we found had been through the most extraordinary, horrendous ordeal. Now, to take someone out of that environment, I mean, they're broken. They're incredibly, very, very, very dark space. And yet, as Sarah said, you give them control over what they say and how they're prepared to say it. And you know, if they really feel that by getting their story out, they're going to help others and expose some of these criminals, then you go along with them. I think in terms of process, because we do different types of stories, and because we do look into things like corruption and fraud, we're often going for criminal targets, and we're not really that interested in a relationship of trust, except to the extent that we go undercover a lot. When you go undercover, you're essentially acting, and you have to stay in character, as it were, to get this person to talk and say and expose themselves, incriminate themselves, if you like. But I think there's also the whole thing about sources, you know. I mean, you need great sources for these stories. I mean, it can be a tip-off, it can be brown envelopes, it can be just ideas, but you need sources. You need people to get you on the inside track. And your relationship with those sources is incredibly sensitive and incredibly important. Number one, you protect their identity all the way. But number two, you have to test their claims. You know, they may not be totally reliable sources. You don't know. And again, you can build up trust over a period of time. And if that person eventually lets you down, then you drop them. But it's a delicate relationship because you're protecting them, but you need them to get you to the people that you're targeting.
A curious culture is a game changer. What does curiosity mean for you? Follow hashtag Curious Advantage and join the conversation.
David, you and Sarah, you both are talking about some of the principles, I think, that must underlie your work. You're balancing continually, it sounds like, this fine line between the story must be told and also perhaps telling the story in a sensitive way that does justice to the participants of the story, I suppose, whether they're on the right side of the law, the wrong side of the law, or whatever the topic of the story is. Sarah, maybe start with you. Do you have some principles in your mind that you are working to when you are putting together a documentary, trying to tell a story?
Well, I mean, it's always about sort of holding those in power accountable and trying to expose the truth and to get to the bottom of whatever the issue is. So, for example, with Grenfell, it was my main motivation was to give the survivors who had gone through the most horrific tragedy a voice. And it was my the drive in that was, okay, this is horrific, and there are people who are who need to be held accountable. And you do get close to the people that I got close with, a lot of the survivors that I worked with, and they helped me as much as I tried to help them. And one of my main principles is basically I want people who have spoken to me and who've given me their time to feel good about the fact that they've done that. It's really important with sensitive stories and human interest stories, which is really my bag, to make sure that that person feels good about what they've spoken out.
And David, what's your view on this? Have there been any cases where you've gone into something and then sort of pulled away and thought, actually, this is not something to explore and to expose?
It does happen occasionally that you have a hunch, you have an idea, you're given a tip off and you look into it and you feel this is just not working. And you know, you have to be really honest with the editor and say, look, you know, I've done absolutely worked diligently on this. I've tested in every way possible. It doesn't stack up. And you still get editors who resist that and say, but it's on the list. You know, you've got to do it. But I think a lot of it is you've just got to apply some really basic principles of journalism. You know, you've got to be dogged, determined, you've got to be forensic, curious, skeptical, asking questions all the time, testing your own thoughts, testing your own evidence. Does it stand up? Is it really watertight? Or is this a bit flaky? Am I trying to convince myself that this is the case when really it isn't? You know, even criminals deserve a right of reply. Are you giving them that chance? You know, are you being balanced here? And, you know, it's like exposing wrongdoing is something that it's just got to be completely evidence-based. Here's what we're saying. Here's the evidence. And you let the evidence drive the story.
I was going to ask you about that, because you talk about sometimes wanting to go down a storyline that you might want to be wanting to be true, and yet you have to pull back from that. Is that the case? I mean, we know that truth is always relative. We know that truth is a perspective often, but yet there are certain situations about right and wrong and certain situations about the law and so on, which define what the truth is for that context. You talk about being evidence-based and so on, but how, as a curious individual, do you maintain that kind of critical distance and also that emotional distance, especially when you're dealing with some of the tough stories that Sarah was talking about? Sarah?
It is really difficult. I think one thing that David mentioned before that I think is really interesting is I have worked on stories and met people where I felt that actually, even though they had an extraordinary story, they were too fragile and it would not be good for them to do an interview with them. I worked on one film and we interviewed a woman who was clearly very, very mentally ill and was a relative of a jihadi that had been involved in a huge attack. And I felt like after a while it was probably immoral to carry on. And also we do have to speak to lawyers, everything, and Ed Paul. For Grenfell, we had psychologists looking at our rushes before we put stuff out for Newsnight, especially with children. With children, it's really important, the safeguarding. And you have to think about, what is this person going to think when they look at this on YouTube 10 years from now, 20 years from now, because it lives on.
David, how do you maintain emotional distance from some of the tough stories you have to get involved with?
Well, this happens a lot. And I think in some ways you have to be a little bit like a doctor. You know, you need to keep your professionalism whilst being empathetic. And showing empathy clearly is a way of encouraging, helping people to tell their story. But you can't afford to get dragged into it. And there's a couple of stories bring to mind here. One was, I was covering the war in Kosovo, and I was on the border of Macedonia. And there were, you know, if you remember, Milosevic had driven out all the Kosovar, the Albanians out in a kind of ethnic cleansing. But Macedonia refused to open the border. So all these people, hundreds of people, were gathered at the border. And there were sort of women giving birth in ditches. It was an absolutely horrendous situation. Anyway, the British military built a refugee camp just a couple of miles inside. And they were all piled onto these buses. But the soldiers were saying, no, not the British soldiers, but the Macedonians were saying to you, you're too old, you can't come. And it was just, again, this horrific situation. But I was in the camp when the first bus arrived, and this man, I can still see his face now. He came off the bus, he must have been in his 80s, and he was in tears, he was totally bewildered and confused. He couldn't find his family. And he just came to me and he just said, help me, help me, help me. I'm thinking, how can I help him? And the way I chose to help him was just by reassuring him that at least for now, he had shelter, he had food, he had clean water, he had sanitation, and that the NGOs and the British military would help him to find his family. But it was one of those, it was genuinely moving. And it was, you know, you'd have had a heart of stone not to be moved by that. Another case that springs immediately to mind is a famous trial in the 90s, the James Bulger trial. This was the murder of 2-year-old James Bulger by two boys. I think they were about 10 and 11. It shocked the nation, and it's still being written about and documentaries being made about it. I remember on the train back after the first week when, you know, you're limited in what you can write during one of the trials ongoing, but I was writing my story on the train back to London. It was at Preston Crown Court. And I can remember as I wrote it, I was welling up, and, you know, it was incredibly moving and upsetting. And yet I sort of like to think I channel that into my writing, and the piece I wrote is one I'm so very proud of. So I think at times, you know, you've got to control your emotion, got to be a bit like a doctor, but equally you can use some of that emotion as passion to inform the quality of your journalism.
As I listened to you, the word that was going through my mind again and again is a doctor. And it sounds like from listening to both of you that the work is not dissimilar to being a doctor or a psychiatrist in some way. The way that you're exploring people's personal stories and backgrounds and what they're connected to, but in a different way, whereas a doctor is looking to perhaps cure them, well, you are looking to help them tell their story. And how do you find that has affected you personally, where you've encountered these individuals, really engaged perhaps emotionally with them and their story and their lives, but then actually walk away from that?
I've shown my emotion when I've been really moved before in situations. I mean, you do have to be professional and have boundaries. I don't think as a journalist, you always have to hide your emotions.
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book, The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon.
Let's think about stories that you both may have been involved in that are not necessarily heavily emotionally driven, but you're after the truth or you're after an understanding of what's going on. You've had to develop trust with people. Maybe you're even in a situation where you like people a lot and you like the situation. How do you deal with unconscious bias? Are you ever in situations where you find it the story is reflecting things that you believe yourself? Or, you know, how do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, I've been in lots of situations like that. I mean, certainly when you're going undercover to expose bad people, occasionally some of them do have a certain charm. It's a sort of malign charm in a way, but it's a charm nonetheless. And you just got to be incredibly careful, and you have to keep that distance, keep reminding yourself and keep your eyes on the prize. I remember we did an investigation a couple of years ago into match fixing in cricket, and we met these guys in India who were up to all sorts of things, fixing matches. You know, they were constantly inviting us out for drinks and to go partying with them. And, you know, you just have to either not go, which is what we did most of the time, or, you know, you might have one. You've got to keep them on side. And, you know, you are playing this role as somebody who wants to do a sort of criminal deal with them or do business with them. So, you know, you've got to get that balance right. But, you know, you've got to just keep remembering what you're there for, and it's to gather evidence. And if you've got secret cameras on, then you sometimes get good evidence over a drink. It doesn't mean to say they're getting drunk, but, you know, they can relax them and they can give things away and incriminate themselves.
I think unconscious bias is a really tricky thing because it's unconscious. So we don't actually realize we might have certain thoughts, and it only takes a split second to have a thought about, you know, to pass judgment on a situation or a person. I think what I always find very interesting in people is when it's to kind of challenge our ideas of what types of people might get into certain things. Actually, last year I did a story about It was when the whole debate was going on about Shamima Begum and whether she should be allowed back into the UK. And I interviewed various young people that had been through one of France's de-radicalization programs. And one of the girls that I interviewed was, you know, similar background to me, half Turkish, half, well, she was half French. And she was very articulate, lovely, sweet, softly spoken, you know, dressed like a normal teenage girl. Yet she had been plotting to blow up a concert hall in a similar fashion to the Bataclan. You know, those types of people really challenge your ideas about what type of person would get radicalized. Or about knife crime, I do remember an editor asking me to work on a story about fatherless sons and knife crime. But one of the most interesting interviews I had was with this father who was completely present in his son's life, talking about how his son had gotten involved in knife crime and had ended up getting brutally attacked and had gotten involved in gangs. I think we all have ideas about, oh, well, this is this type of person would get involved with this. But actually, it's good to challenge those ideas.
Do you think that as after a lifetime of exploring these things, it's made you more open, or it's made you more have more boundaries? What's been the impact of meeting so many different people with so many different stories?
I mean, I like to think it's broadened my perspective. You know, I mean, I've covered wars all over the world. I've done stories all over the world. I also run occasional training courses for journalists in developing countries. And this has included many Muslim countries, Sudan, Algeria, Morocco, places like that, and Syria and Lebanon. And I think that's really helped me, I think, to get into, particularly talking to journalists, because it really helps you get inside the mentality of a country and its people. You know, you come perhaps with prejudice. I like to think I've sort of shed most of them along the way. But these people, they challenge your views and you challenge your own views. And I think something like, you know, traveling, covering stories in different parts of the world, it helps you drop some of these prejudice that you may go in with.
Yeah, and I would turn it back to curiosity as well, maybe to you both, that you are two people that, by the sound of it, have made careers out of being curious, as I think you both said. Would there be some advice or a principle that you could share with us in summary that how you apply some of these things for any individual who is looking to be more curious in their work or in their lives or with their friends and with their family?
I mean, I would just say try to stay open-minded and you know, challenge your own views, but embrace people. Don't push them away. And I found that, you know, all over the world, if you do that, you embrace people, they embrace you back most of the time. And you learn from that. And I remember, again, in the war in Afghanistan, and you know, it was a rough old time, and there's refugees everywhere, people suffering everywhere. And I remember this poor family lived in effectively a mud hut, essentially. And he invited us in to share the last of his food. And it's acts of kindness like that, you think, you know, that blow away sort of lots of your prejudice and your ideas about certain groups of people, certain types of people. So I would say, yes, stay open-minded, be receptive to other people's views and challenge your own views. I think in the end, you do end up with a broader, and I hope, a healthier perspective.
I love that. I love that idea of sort of embracing other people and they embrace you back. Sarah, do you have an idea there around principles that relating to how we could be more curious as individuals?
Well, I think it's just really important to listen to people and engage and talk to people and understand, try to understand their story and what they're about and put yourself in their shoes. I think empathy and just communicating and being open-minded is really important.
Well, David and Sarah, you both have amazing stories and have been involved in amazing situations. It's fascinating talking to you. It's fascinating talking to you in the context of curiosity and how we keep ourselves emotionally distant from engaging, but at the same time able to explore and get to the truth or the understanding of things, and yet being able to be critically distant or keep our unconscious bias in check and so on. Thank you so much for joining us, and look forward to seeing you again sometime soon.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast. The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and edited by John McGinty and Jill Damatak-Futter.